I've always tried to be very honest. Like, I don't come on always made up. I'm not vain in the fact that I feel I have to be perfect all the time. I think people related to that because they were so sick of seeing everything airbrushed all the time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. We are very close to hitting a landmark this month. We're very close to hitting 10,000 downloads for March, but I need your help. I need you to send this podcast to one other person. Send it to 10, send it to 100, but at least send it to one other person. Hitting 10,000 downloads regularly per month is a big goal of mine for 2021. So if you can help me hit that, I would really appreciate it. Now, on to today's chat with Susie O'Neill. Susie is one of those people I've connected with for a long time online and never met. We actually still haven't met. We just met via Zoom. But I just love following Susie because her work ethic is just so inspiring. It's infectious. Everything about Susie's persona and her personality is just infectious and is exactly what we need right now. Susie is the founder of AU Cosmetics, a hugely successful Irish cosmetics brand. And because she wasn't busy enough, she went and started another company during lockdown, Five Star Fulfillment, which is aiming to be a fulfillment company for e-commerce brands here in Ireland. I love, love, love this idea. I think Susie has really captured lightning in a bottle with this business. And I think it's going to be absolutely massive. So I'm delighted to be able to speak to her when it's just starting off. Here is my chat with Susie O'Neill, the founder of AU Cosmetics and Five Star Fulfillment. Susie, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much for having me.
Delighted to have you on the pod. You are possibly the busiest entrepreneur I've seen in COVID. I love watching your Instagram. It's both inspiring and also makes me feel a little bit lazy.
Yeah, I get that a bit. People tell me that they're tired looking at me. So.
So tell everyone what you do.
So I own AU Cosmetics. It is a cosmetic brand. We are online. And just more recently, I have opened Five Star Fulfillment, which is a fulfillment company for e-commerce based businesses. So we do all picking, packing, delivering. We do customer service. The whole works on the background of any e-commerce businesses.
And you launched that when?
We actually opened our doors just 2 weeks ago.
Right in the middle of everything. I saw on your Instagram a month or two ago and I was like, wait, she's opening this now? And I was just on the back of every week in the pod, I was banging on about, oh, everyone's going to have to go e-commerce. Everyone's going to have to go e-commerce. And I saw you opening that and I was like, that is such a great idea.
Yeah. And I think when we launched, most people were expecting me to come out with another product-based brand or something like that. It was totally different to what they expected. But it's definitely a space I feel I can bring a lot to. So it's a very exciting time. Very busy, but exciting.
Yeah. So we'll go full circle. We'll work our way up to that. How did you originally start?
With AU, I have been in the beauty industry about 20 years now. So I was teaching in a college. And when we started the brand, there just wasn't the brands there is now. There wasn't the amount, or there wasn't really high quality at a really good, affordable price. So I wanted to create something for my students to have and to be able to access, because I think tools are really important in that. While I was working in college, I started to develop. I was getting different brands in, but I wasn't really happy with anything. So I decided to try and make my own. And I was really lucky in the fact that it was them who kind of came to me saying, oh, could I have that for my friend or my mom or whoever? And I thought there might be a gap in the market for me, but they actually were my focus group as well, because they trialed and tested everything I sampled and everything that got in until it was perfect, and until we made our first order then. So once that started, I had just had my first child, Ollie, when I launched the first lot of brushes. And at the time I was working 6 days a week, and I kind of felt to myself, do you know what? It's like, I don't know if you know much about Sarah Blakely, but her thing of like, this isn't my movie. I felt like I had gone back to work 8 weeks after he was born because they didn't get cover for me. And I was trying to build this business and I was just pulled in every different direction. So I said, I had to make a decision as to either sink or swim and go all in with the brushes or continue going to somebody else's timetable, not seeing my new baby, you know, this kind of thing. So I took the plunge and, I went full time with AU, and like that, had no money, gave up, you know, my wages and whatever, and thought to myself, it has to work because I have no other fallback. But I have a love of makeup anyway, so that made it easy for me that I really, and I had a love of education too. So with us, we're online, so we're like direct consumer, and everything I do is about teaching our customers how to use the brands and use the products and the brushes and everything before they actually buy them.
Okay. You know? I love that though, because everyone's always like, oh, when the time is right. And that's never, it's often when the time is possibly the worst and you're pushed into like a corner or you're pushed into having to make a hard decision. How did you weigh that up? What was your thought process? Because I think that's one of the things I see holding people back all the time, is that thought process of, oh, when the time is right, I will. What eventually was the catalyst? I think you talked about there with Ollie, but what was the catalyst that made you go, right, that's it?
Well, I think, you know, I've had a few different businesses before. I used to have a beauty salon, and I kind of entrepreneurial anyway. So as I said before we started, I'm kind of hard to manage too. So I don't like to kind of go to anybody else's rules or timesheets and things like that. And I felt I could have run the place I was working a little bit better than they were at the time too. So for me, it was a case of, okay, do I keep continuing and get a nice bit of money every month and be okay, not very happy, or do I try something that's exciting and that I really love and just see where it brings me, you know? And I actually felt, to be honest, even though I had Ollie was only, you know, a few weeks old at the time, and I had no money. For me, it was the best time ever because I had nothing to lose either.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. So I just said, sure, why not try it? And when I started, even though, again, when you're working for yourselves, I'm sure you know, you never really switch off. But it's a different type of, you know, work, because you never mind doing it. You love doing it. So it doesn't matter if you're a nighttime working away, because you can then take an hour off another day to go and do something else.
Exactly.
Yeah. Your own diary. So that for me was a big plus. And like that, just thinking, you know, I kind of felt there has to be more for me. This isn't what I was made to do. Like I was made to do more than where I was. So it, all those things together kind of just bunched and gave me the push. My husband's great as well, in fairness. He, rightly or wrongly, like totally believes in everything that I do. And he does not think I can fail at anything. So he would be kind of like, you know, I think you can do it. Just do it. You know, just as simple as that, as if, you know, it's
nice to have that voice in your ear sometimes, because sometimes you do go, oh, can I do it? Should I do it? We're our own worst critic. We definitely are. And talk to me then about the first kind of like 6 to 12 months of that, because that sounds hectic.
Yeah, it was. And we actually, the first delivery we got in, 1,000 of the brushes were faulty. And thinking of that, like when we got our first batch in, it was all my money, like every saving, every penny that I had spare was gone into it. And I just remember ringing my sister and I'm like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? I've no money and this is wrong. I can't sell them.
What was wrong with them?
All the heads had come off.
That's pretty faulty, all right.
They definitely weren't usable. And I, again, like, well, actually, you know, the very first thing before that even was noticed. I was so new to it that I didn't realize when they came in, I'd have to pay customs and things like that. So it hadn't, I hadn't put that into my budget. So I got this big bill and I was thinking, oh God. So she said to me, she was like, you know, now that you're in business, every day there's going to be a bump in the road. You just have to learn how to ride the bumps and just get on with it. And it was, you know, it's always stuck with me because every day there is something. Mm. But now I don't panic anymore. I kind of just say, okay, take stock. How do I fix it? You know, I don't kind of ever look at the problem. I'm kind of always thinking, okay, how do we get by this now? And luckily the factory that I work with were brilliant, so that when that issue did happen, they were able to get me replacements pretty quickly and look after getting those back, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it, because I didn't have the money to buy a whole new set. You know, I had put everything I had into it.
So you were able to get them repaired and then resent back to you?
Brand new and sent over.
Okay.
Yeah. So it delayed me starting a little bit, but you know, in the broad scheme of things, I wasn't going to go out with something that... And that happened a few times, to be fair, that, you know, things would come in and I'd be like, no, I can't sell that because I can't put my name on it, you know. But the first 6 to 12 months were just like, they were a big learning curve, because we were on Facebook. That's how I advertised.
So I was going to ask you, where was the first? Because there's always one avenue people go down first. Where is that? Facebook?
So Facebook. And at the time we were lucky because you could, you know, Facebook, there wasn't the paid advertising or anything like that. So we kind of organically just got selling the brushes. They kind of were taken pretty quickly. So that was great. And And to be honest, it all went great for the first little while. But then other people started getting in my ear and you should do this and you should do that. And I started going to, I got a PR company who then told me to change the coloring and change this. And they were very focused towards young makeup, like younger people. And it wasn't my style. And we ended up investing. I say we all the time, even though it was only myself, but I ended up putting loads of money into these new colorful brushes and stuff. And it completely failed. Like it wasn't me. Like I knew I was just doing what they told me to do. And it just wasn't a right fit. And at that time, I actually thought about giving everything up and just saying, oh, look, this is too hard. I'm after losing a fortune here.
Really?
You know,
how far into the journey was this?
This was about a year and a half in, because he had done well on the first lot. And I was thinking, okay, I can make this something, you know. So I spent some money in a PR company. And at that time, this is what I was saying to you, like we were thinking they'll go into the stores with this. They'll be everywhere. This is what I was listening to. And we didn't end up going to stores, but I was doing them online. And just, I think because they were never me, I could never sell them. You know, they just weren't my style. And I knew then the authentic kind of nature of my videos was, it just wasn't there. Cause like, I couldn't honestly say I absolutely love these, you know, the kind of way.
Yeah.
So I lost a fortune. I nearly gave it up. But then I went into quite a not so nice space at that stage. I got really kind of down in the dumps and I was just kind of retreated to myself, and I stopped doing anything online for about 6 months. And then I just remember saying to Alan one day, I'm just going to get up. I'm going to do my face. I'm going to get myself back in order again. And I just decided I'm just going to do my own makeup like I normally do it. And I did. Mm-hmm. And people started to respond to it. And I said, well, maybe I can just do what I want to do. Yeah. And this will work this way. And it did. I started to get much more traction. There was much more views coming on videos. Like they went from a couple of thousand views to some now, like they'd be over a million on them in the Facebook kind of realm. Like, but it was hundreds of thousands back then. They were going, because everyone just wanted this simple, like clean makeup that I was doing, you know, and that I wanted, but I was kind of brainwashed by other people at the time, thinking, oh, you'll get this, you'll be so successful if you do
this.
It's
funny though, even we go against our gut and we go against what got us to the dance in the first place, and we go against like, oh no, they must know. They must know better. And like, I'm number one guilty of this. Like, I always look at other people, go, yeah, they must definitely know what they're talking about. I'll try that. And it's when you go back to your gut and you're just honest and open and just even talk to people honestly and openly, it's such a difference.
Yeah, big time. And that's why ever since then, I just go with my gut. So if my gut's telling me something isn't right, I'll just say no. And even if it looks like a really good offer doing something, I'll still say no. Because I know myself now what works and what doesn't for me. And what I know, I always kind of say to myself, as long as I can go to bed at night and put my head to the pillow and know I've done an honest day's work and I haven't hurt anybody or I've tried to help somebody, then that's all I need, you know. But if I go to bed and there's something unsettling, then I know, no, this can't, it's not right, you know.
It's a horrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling when you go down that path and you're like, oh, I'm fighting against everything. So how did that change things around for you then? Was it as simple as that, of just kind of getting out of the rut, getting back to your authentic self?
Well, getting back to myself, and then I brought the brushes back to the coloring that I wanted at the start. So they weren't colorful anymore. They were just muted classic tones. And from that, see, when the videos then started to get loads of traction, people, at the time I was doing private lessons, and people started asking, did I travel to Cork? Would I travel to Kerry? Would I go here, there and everywhere? And I kind of was like, no, well, I can't, but how do I bring myself to them in a way? Mm. So we started doing these classes all over the country, makeup classes. So they started with 25 people in a class. And when we finished up before COVID, we had a days out of 400 per day,
really?
You know? So we were everywhere. We were all over the country. So for weeks, we would do them in slots kind of 3 months, and we would be every weekend away, and we would do maybe two or three shows at a weekend. And from that, again, I was listening to women telling me all the time what their issues were with makeup. You know, oh, I don't like this palette, has loads of colors. I just want simple. And that's how our first cosmetic actually came by, because I wanted just an eyeshadow palette that was really simple to use, would suit everybody. And it was them telling me, like, and that's what I still do now. Everything we bring out is, it come from our customers telling me, you know, oh, I like this, but I kind of would prefer to be like that. And then I'm like, I wonder, can I make that? Can I Can I fix that? Can I make it easier and more condensed for them?
That's so interesting, though. Talk to me about those classes. Did that just organically started to happen? You started getting requests and then you started doing them.
Well, I started getting requests for all these lessons. So I just put up on Facebook one day, if I was to come to Kilkenny next weekend, you know, would you come? And people were like, yes, please come here.
For one day only.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. Like that we granted the first class only had 25 people, but they sold, you know, within an hour of me putting them up. And
wow.
You know, this is something, you know, I didn't know people would pay to come to see me, you know. And then we started, and it was so basic at the start. Like, we just had a little table at the top of a room and my makeup kit. My sister was my model, and we had no cameras, no screens, nothing, you know. But as we went along and the numbers got bigger, obviously we started to get better with our production, and it just grew. And again, those classes then allowed me to invest in the cosmetics and to go in, because obviously minimum order quantities for cosmetics are huge. So like, it's not a cheap thing to do in any form. So having done all those classes, again, it gave me the confidence as well that, okay, well, if this many people are coming to see me, then I think they will want what I make too, you know. But I remember when we launched the eyeshadow palette, it was our first cosmetic. And again, because I didn't have loads of money, I put all the money that I had into getting this palette, but I didn't have enough money for a graphic designer to do the artwork. So the artwork on it was from Microsoft Word. It was me just putting a little stamp on something and, you know, trying to make it. And when they came in, they went really well. And myself and my husband, Alan, and the two kids were bubble wrapping eyeshadow palettes and putting them in envelopes and handwriting, because I had no label maker at the time, but getting them all out to people.
So you had the brushes. You were doing the brushes, and then you started doing the classes. And then from the classes, people kept kind of referencing certain things to you, and you had that moment then of thinking, well, how did you come up with the cosmetics?
Well, you see, it was always a dream of mine to have. I always said when I was kind of in business, or like when I was starting this, I was like, I'd love to have that my whole makeup bag was my own brand.
Okay. You know,
I could do my whole face with my own brand. But again, I never thought, I kind of at the time, I didn't think people would want it. I didn't have the confidence to think that if I, you know, sold something, why would they buy mine if they could buy Mac or Bobbi Brown or something, you know? But then when I was just talking to the women, and I had a connection with them, because I think I've always tried to be very honest. Like, I don't come on always made up, and I allow people to see my skin as it is and what I look like, you know, at any given time of the day. I'm not vain in the fact that I feel I have to be perfect all the time. Mm. And I think people related to that because they were so sick of seeing everything airbrushed all the time.
Especially on social media as well. I think it's refreshing when there's an honesty.
Exactly. You know, and we all know that, you know, even if you're super successful, you have a bad day, and it's okay to have that. And people need to know that not everything always goes to plan, you know, that there are times where it all falls asunder and you're just trying to keep your head above water. But by listening to them, I kind of thought I wanted to do the eyeshadow palette, and I just thought, well, I think this is something, it could work for everybody. So I kind of thought I only need to make one. And I said, I'll just do one this year, one product. And just see how it goes. But the eyeshadow palette had no quicker launch than I was already onto the next. And I said to Alan, I was like, oh, I just have to do this one more this year.
How far in your journey was this? How far along into, say, the brushes and everything was this?
Well, we only launched the cosmetics 3 years ago. Okay. So this was kind of 4 years in. But, you know, taking into account that I had my little kind of break in it as well at the time. I had another child, have a daughter, Chloe, as well. So she was in there in the mix as well. But when I started doing the classes, it was like a light turned on. It was almost like, because even friends of mine were like, God, it just happened overnight. And I was like, well, no, it didn't. I've been at this for years. Like, I've been trying for ages.
Every weekend. You've never seen it. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
You know, so it kind of just felt like it was all, you know, once that started, then it changed us all together. It changed the business. It really kind of went from here to up here.
The cosmetics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how did you handle that transition? Because a single product, how did you handle going into a whole new sphere?
Do you know, I do a lot of, I spend a lot of time listening to audiobooks and podcasts like yours. And I do a lot of work on myself. Okay. So to be honest, I feel like I was in training for it, because a few times throughout the first few years of AU, I hit a self-destruct button where I would have been, there would have been really good opportunities that I could have taken that I didn't, because I had that thing of like, I'm just going to stay small enough that, you know, people won't notice me. And like, I won't take that. I wouldn't push myself off the edge to do the hard stuff and to take the risk or whatever. So I think then I started trying to really work myself, and I really doubled down on it. And I was listening to a lot of books and watching a lot of things, and it kind of brainwashed me, I think, to kind of think, well, maybe I can do this too, and try and take it all in my stride rather than panic and retreat like I would have done in the past. So when the cosmetics started to get big, I something in me was like able to handle it this time. I didn't shy away. And then from there, I actually have a really good team now. I was still on my own when it started to grow quite big, but it came a point then. And I always say to people, I was probably a year or two later employing people than I should have been as well. But again, that was just a fear thing of like, am I going to be able to pay them at the end of each month and having somebody else's livelihood on my shoulders, you know? So when I did take the girls on, like when the first girls came on board with me, these things changed how I did stuff as well, because all of a sudden all the pressure wasn't on my shoulders anymore, and it was kind of evened out. And I felt secure enough at that point that we were at a level where I could pay people without panicking, you know. So I think all the audiobooks, and I always say to people, I know you said before as well, it's the right book at the right time. Yes. And I think I said it to you ages ago when you were talking about books, about Mel Robbins' 5-second rule. It's just an amazing book. And I think I must have just read it at the right time. And it's like, even now, I still in the morning time when I'm getting up at 6 to go for my run, I still sometimes have to say, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. You know.
I was always a big reader, but I've only really realized that in the last couple of years is the right book at the right time. Because like, you always like, people always ask me, oh, what book do you recommend? I was like, I always used to fire off whatever was my favorite. And I was like, well, what's happening with you? What are you doing? What are you working on? What are you thinking about? What's keeping you up at night, or what's getting you up in the morning first thing excited? Like it's so powerful. Like if you can get that right bit of, like, books just give you so much info, like for like a 10 or 15 quid, like that, all that info is in there. You're right though. It's over a long period of time. I always used to mistakenly think, oh, I'll just find the answer in this one. The answer is going to be in this one now, or it's going to be in this podcast, or it's going to be, it's all of them together. The patterns you start seeing. So it's interesting that you started actively working on that. And it's the positive voices as well, though, isn't it? Like you hear in the podcast, and you're hearing these people, and they're just ordinary people. That's what I love doing about the pod. I said that about someone yesterday. You're just meeting ordinary people who are just very down to earth and very honest. And it kind of gives you that confidence to go, they're just like me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it, because I think you do kind of put people on a pedestal. And, you know, the reality is they are the same as you. It's just that they've probably worked on discipline and, you know, made themselves do the hard stuff more. And it comes a little easier the more you do it, I think, but it takes time to build that too. Like I would have thought as well, I shouldn't say this probably, but there are certain people that I worked with, you know, over the last few years that I would have, like in certain, you know, television stations and stuff like that, that I would have always thought that they had it all sorted. Yeah. They knew everything. Oh, and then you get in there and you're like, this is a mess. Like nobody is anything organized, you know? Yeah, but like, you know, or they'd be totally unorganized. And I'd be like, thank God it's not just me. Like, because I'm so unorganized. Like I always kind of say everything is an organized mess in my head, because I know what to have to do, but it would be all over the shop, you know? So it's kind of nice to see that people who are that high are the same.
We're all human. I think that's the thing. Oh, I'm very guilty of the pedestal thing, less so now, but you do, because you look and you go, oh my God, they've all these things, or they're on telly, or they're on the radio, or they've either got this business. They must have this superhuman secret sauce that I don't have. Yeah. You sound like you went on a bit of a journey though in the early years. Was there certain things you started doing differently that kind of brought you along to where you are now?
Personally, you mean?
Yeah, it sounds like you went on a bit of a personal journey there.
Yeah, I definitely did. I suppose I was a much bigger person than I am now. I lost a lot of weight. There was a time where I was kind of unhealthy, probably eating and drinking too much and all that kind of stuff. And I credit my husband to the change in lifestyle, because he is not a big drinker and he's really, really active. And I would have done sports and stuff, but I never did anything consistently. And I probably was one of those people back then who was always giving out about something, or, you know, no, life's so unfair and all this kind of stuff. And living with him, he's not like that. And I think, you know, there was something in me that wanted to change that. I didn't want to be like that anymore, especially when I was starting my new business. And I'd lost my confidence in everything because I just felt I didn't look like I wanted to, or I didn't feel like I wanted to. So I decided to make a change. And now, like, for me, it's starting to exercise, and it was cutting out the bad stuff in the diet. And like, I still love my glass of wine, but I wouldn't be someone who drinks a whole lot, you know. And at the time, I had to kind of shed a few people in that as well, because people would say I was boring then, because I wasn't the party animal that I was, or, you know, the kind of way, you know. But then I kind of thought to myself, well, do I want to be party animal and go nowhere, or do I want to make something of myself and be super healthy and, you know, live a life that I'm really happy in? So, you know, and I say this to people all the time as well, like, you are the product of the people you hang around with. So you sometimes have to just, as my auntie says, kind of reposition people in your life. And
what a, you know, politically correct way of putting it. That's lovely.
I know. but it's so true. Like, you know, it's not like they've done anything or you've done anything. Yeah. You're just going in different paths. And I think that for me, like, that was kind of the start of it, when I wanted to just make a change. And that time when I said to Alan, I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to put my face on, I'm going to get dressed like I used to before kids and before, you know, I felt like this. And it did change me. And that's one of the things with AU as well. It's so powerful for me, is that I just know how it can change my mood and how it can make me feel more powerful to put my face on and, you know, put my best foot forward. That's what I want for every woman, because I think women, especially once they become mothers or if their cares are, and they forget about themselves, they put themselves in second all the time. And there's really no need for that. Like, we can still be a person and a mother. Like, I can still have my work, but can I still be a great mom too, you know? Like, so it was a case of trying to just work on it and trying to be consistent. It's probably the thing I've been most consistent of in my life, is just the change of doing the exercise every day. And I'm basically brainwashing myself all the time. Like, I don't spend time watching, I do loads of Housewives of Beverly Hills, but that's on my weekend when I'm switching off. But I tend to consume content that's going to be good for me. And I know my lifestyle wouldn't be for everybody. Some people would be like, Christ, she is relentless. And you just, you know, I'd be a head wrecker to some. But the way I said it, it makes me happy and it keeps me focused on what the goals I have are. Like, I'm a big goal setter and vision board person. So I, like, once I have a project like that to work on, I put the head down and I just keep myself, you know, focused on it. And I think all these things help, all the books and all the other books and the exercise. You know, you exercise a lot as well, so I'm sure you know that after every workout, you know, you've won that little battle of the day. So now you're ready for the next.
It's the anchor that holds me in place. Otherwise, if I find, someone asked me that yesterday, weirdly enough, they're like, oh, what's the one thing that you have to do? And I was like, it's exercise, just because that grounds me. And then that gives me, you know, yourself, that feeling afterwards. And that's kind of like the main thing. If I conquered nothing else that day, but I did that, I'd know I'd feel pretty good. Like, even if nothing else was moving along. Talk to me about the goal setting side of things, because I'm always fascinated by that. How do you do that?
So with the goals, I have, and it's one of these things I read that, you know, a dream without a goal is just a dream, but I will always write down what it is I want to get to. So I do have a little notebook that comes everywhere with me. And it's, I suppose, goal setting, vision board, same type of thing. So it can be anything from a business goal, or there's a handbag I like that I want, or, you know, a car that I want to go. But what I tend to do, and I might sound a little bit weird, is...
the weirder, the better. This is exactly why I'm asking this question.
But when I have it that I'm like, okay, I want this thing, I'll have it in my head. But when I'm out running then, or if I'm in the car driving, have music on, I'm thinking of that thing. So I've already started to live it in my mind. And that for me helps me. It seems that then it's not so hard to get, because I've normalized it in my head that I can have this. Like when I did the 50K, I had run that in my head so many times before I ever set foot on the ground for the day of doing it. And I visualized and had in my head the the feeling I was going to get coming into the last kilometer. Like, this is how I do it even in work or when I had the shows and stuff. I to stop myself getting really nervous, I'd visualize how I wanted the class to go, and I would really kind of focus in on that, and I'd see myself teaching it, and, you know, I'd have it down to a T, and it works. I think it's all so psychological. Like, your mind is so powerful that I think if you can try and master it, it can just make everything so much easier, you know, and more attainable then, because you're not seeing it as such a massive thing anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, visualization is so powerful. I'm always interested how people do it. Is there a process you follow? Like, do you have something that hooks you in, or is there something, how do you visualize it? How do you start the visualization process?
Well, I just, to be honest, I'm a daydreamer. Like, I'm always daydreaming. I could be sitting, if I look like I have a blank expression on my face, it's probably because I'm daydreaming about something. So a song sometimes can even put something in my head, or if I've seen something, I just let my imagination run away with me. And that's kind of how it works for me. You know, we had the foundation launch last week, and when I was running last week, each day I was visualizing how it was going to go. And then even for the warehouse, you know, how it was going to work from the girls going, and even to the point of customers telling me they had got it and they were so delighted. Like,
wow. The whole way along. I love that.
The whole way. Yeah. Mm. And then it forces me to work harder too, because I really wanted that to happen. So, we worked our asses off for the last 5 days to get everything out. But we had people who ordered Friday morning, get them on Saturday, and tell me they were so delighted. And so it does drive me forward, and it keeps me, you know, it makes me work harder for the things than if I'm constantly in my head thinking about what it is. And even it can be down to sometimes, like, again, okay, I'm going to sound a bit superficial now, but when I started the company first, the woman I used to work with used to always refer to it as my little brush company.
Oh,
and I had
this, that's motivating in itself.
Oh, listen, it used to drive me mad. Like, she would say it so often. And I used to
That's on purpose, though. People do that. Absolutely. They do that on purpose. It's a little bit of fun, but it's an on-purpose job.
Oh, no, for sure. And so I used to be out running. I'd be thinking to myself, I'd be visualizing the day of going up, driving in this particular car that I wanted to the place, to her, to, you know, to, because we used to supply that place with brushes. But I had pictured myself driving up and delivering them to her, and just to see the face of her. And I did get to do that one day, and I was just like, this, you know,
feels good.
So freezing. I sound terrible now saying that, but, you know, like, it can be any which way, but it's all in the head. It's all the daydreaming of, like, what I want at the end of it. You know,
you need that feel, though. You need something driving you. It's interesting to hear. It's always different for everyone, but the visualization is a common thing I see with so many people. I'm always so fascinated, though, how people do it. It's because it's such a powerful tool. And then how do you plan? Because you seem like you're so busy. Like, how do you plan, let's say, a week or a quarter or a month, or what's your process for that?
So I've only kind of started trying to get good at this over the last year, because, you know, it's not something I was great at before, because I was kind of always just running from here to there. But Olivia, who is my COO in the company, she's my business partner actually in Five Star Fulfillment as well. She has changed how I do everything. So she keeps me on track, and she'll make me forecast and kind of say, okay, what's our plan for this quarter? And we sit down and we write exactly what we want, I suppose, for that next 3 months, and what we want to do. And then we just try and keep to it. But as you know yourself, things happen every day that pull you in different directions. But as long as our main goal stays the same, you know, we kind of do it on a 3 monthly basis rather than trying to say, now we have yearly goals as well, but I try and concentrate on the here and now more so. Like, even as regards to content and stuff, I hear people that are so organized with it and they're, you know, 6 weeks ahead of themselves in content. I'm not. I'm filming a video. I'm just there filming it that day. Like, I wish I could say that I was good at getting prepared in that sense, but I'm not. And even, like, down to, I suppose, like, planning how we're going to launch something, I don't really do it in the traditional sense, I guess, because I like to show people what we're bringing out before it comes out. Okay. So they're all part of it. It's all really organic. It's not, I never have a thought process of saying, like, we're going to keep this thing secret and then say, oh, there's a big reveal. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, I'm making this. What do you think? And then people will tell me, and then it grows from there. So that there's no kind of, I wish I could say there was, but there's no real planning in that. But as on the broader scale, there is obviously, we do have plans, and we try and make them into little sections so that they're not way overwhelming or anything like that.
I suppose the plan is you just share your journey. I suppose that's the plan. The plan is just an ongoing sharing of your journey.
Yeah, because I think then as well, people can, they also relate to that. Like, I don't want anyone to ever think that I have it all sewn up or that I'm so, that I am something I'm not, you know, like I'm just trying. The way I say to people as well is, you know, even if we've had the most amazing day yesterday in business and we've done great things, this morning I wake up and for me, it's a new day. I still have to start again. So I'm starting from zero every day. So it's even, you know, after I did the 50K as well, people were like, God, you must feel great. But I was kind of like the next day thinking, well, what do I do next now?
That's weird, done, isn't it? You know? I was literally troubling over that kind of exact emotion this week. It's a strange, feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you were to rest on your laurels and kind of just leave it at that anyway, you wouldn't be doing things you're doing. You know,
when you did the cosmetics, that seemed to be a bit of a turning point for you. Was that the moment where you're like, I think this is all going to work? Or was there an earlier moment?
Well, I think once the cosmetics came out, it definitely gave me a bit more confidence in doing it. And I was still pretty meek with my order quantities back then as well. But, you know, I've gotten better with that just with time and experience. And, you know, I think as well, because I love it. And we get so many messages from women as well, telling us how the cosmetics have changed their lives. And I know that sounds like such a statement for a cosmetic, but it's what the cosmetic makes you feel. Mm. And that again, for me, is why I'm so driven into what I'm doing and why I want to keep creating things and creating content for women, because I want every woman to know that she can do more, you know, and if a cosmetic's going to help her along that way, that's, you know, it's a driving force. And so perhaps, yeah, when I brought them out, it gave me more of a hook, I suppose, rather. Like, brushes are great, but the brush isn't putting on the product. The product's what's going to put your face out and make you feel powerful, you know. So yeah, it probably was the cosmetics that was the real turning point. To be fair, during the class as well, my confidence did grow doing them, because before we started those classes, I was perfectly fine, my one-to-one, but you would never have gotten me in front of a room of people talking.
Really?
You know? And oh, never, never. Because I'm not the kind of person who, like, if we're in a room of people, you're not going to hear me. Like, I'm not one of those who wants everyone looking at them. So that's why people that I know personally always think it's weird that I do what I do. But because it's not an ego thing for me, it's more that I'm trying to educate women and help women. That's what takes the ego part out of it and the vanity. And so I don't kind of look at it anymore of it's me getting up and doing something. It's me actually getting up to help people. So it's made the process easier. But I definitely, my confidence did grow doing those classes. So now I trust myself more to make decisions and, you know, in what I do, definitely.
You talked earlier about Facebook being your kind of early market kind of go-to strategy. What's the current strategy now? With the class is obviously pre-COVID, but what kind of replaced Facebook for you, I guess, because it's got nearly dead in terms of Facebook?
Well, Facebook for us is still huge.
Really?
Yeah, really big.
Wow.
Bigger than Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
See, our demographic would be mostly 30 plus. So a lot of that demographic is still on Facebook. But no, we have, we get millions of hits on Facebook every week. You know, it's huge for us still. That's our main base would be Facebook still.
That
and then Instagram.
So interesting. And is that organic, Susie, or how is that distributed?
Yeah, we very rarely pay for posts. We might do a paid post now and again if we have a special on or something like that. We never discount. That's something about us as well. But we might do like a special offer or something. But no, it's all organic. And you see, we're really interactive with our women on Facebook. So we spend a lot of time talking to them and conversing with them. And I think that's why it's kept it. But it's also opened us up to other markets as well. So like in America, we have a lot of American women on Facebook. And that has got us a really good base out there, you know, by doing that. But I know because people say to me all the time, "Oh, Facebook is gone." And I'm like,
so shocked. I love getting nuggets of info like that. I love on a pod when I get a nugget of info I didn't know. That's incredible. That still works so well.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's definitely our most powerful area still, absolutely.
Wow, and then
hopefully now after COVID we'll get back to doing our classes.
Yeah, just literally you took the words out of my mouth there. What happened, I guess? Give people a kind of a brief overview with COVID, because I mean, it has affected everyone in different ways, some positive, some negative. What's kind of like the last 12 months been like for you?
So we had to cancel a lot of the shows that we had planned just when COVID hit. At the start, we could have gone ahead of them, but like the guys in the Fat Fox said in your podcast earlier this morning that I listened to, we made the decision to cancel ours because we felt, even though the government hadn't fully said it at that stage, we didn't want that many people congregating in a room, you know, so we did cancel them. So then when COVID started, to be honest, I didn't know what way business was going to go. I kind of said to the girls, look, we have to set ourselves up with the fact that our business might go dead for a few months because we don't know what's going to happen. No one knew. So what I kind of wanted to do was I wanted to give more out for free to people. So I did a 6-week online makeup course for free where people could come and learn their makeup. Because I just felt I didn't want people thinking just because we mightn't be able to sell to them that think that we were gone, that it was just about money, because it never has been for me. Like, money's great and all, but it's not my driver. And so that's what we did. But by doing that and just being online full stop anyway, like, our business went through the roof, to be honest. It was a huge jump, which was great, because obviously, you know, when you're kind of thinking it could die off for a while, it totally turns around. Our main issue was trying to get stock in fast enough for people. But we just, I just kind of kept the content. I just made sure I was there to chat to women, that we were always available and that they knew we were going to be with them. And then we ended up opening our pop-up shop in Kildare Village, which was another thing that was a bit of out of left field for people during a pandemic, that you open a pop-up shop.
That looked so cool, by the way. When I saw it, and my mom went in, she's delighted with herself. She's like, I saw it on Instagram, and then I went in and she was in her element. How did that come about?
Well, they had been asking us to go in during the year, pre-COVID. And I kind of had been dragging my heels a little bit because I wasn't sure how would it be received, you know, and I just wasn't fully convinced. But then Olivia had said to me, well, look, I think this could be a good thing because people will be allowed to come back in and shop. It's a nice way for you to get to see people because you're not getting to see them at your classes.
That's true, yeah.
And I kind of said, I was thinking, yeah, and I was dying to get some interaction with people again myself anyway. So I said, sure, why not? Let's try it out. And it was amazing. It was actually, they told us we were the most successful pop-up shop in that size unit ever that they had.
Wow.
So that was a really, like, really big kind of...
Was that your first retail experience?
Ever, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. How did you even, like, I'm always fascinated by that. How did you even figure out what you needed? Like, how did you know, okay, we need this, this, and this, and this?
We didn't. The day before we opened, it was like scrambling, trying to put stuff into the shop. We had a company come in and do all the graphics and that.
So
the wall design and everything was great. But as regards to showing the stuff, because of COVID as well, we couldn't have testers. So we were like, what do we do? It kind of looked like an empty shop. We had shelves with one or two things on it. And their retail manager came in and said, it looks a bit bleak. We were like, oh my God, you know, we're opening in less than 12 hours. We had to change the whole thing. So it ended up...
I suppose they're quite small products as well. So you probably need tons and tons of them then to fill it up.
Tons of them, yeah. Well, we were lucky as well. At the time, our fulfillment company was in Portlaoise. So he was only 20 minutes away and he got things up to us the next morning. So we were opening at Mullin first thing, just filling the shelves and hoping for the best that we could make it look really good, which in the end, I think it did. I was really happy with how it looked. And, you know, it was so nice because we got to meet everybody there and we got to see so many people when they were allowed to travel. And, you know, it was brilliant. But no, it was definitely a panic. The last 24 hours were just trying to scramble to get everything done. And even to get furniture, we wanted a black table in there, but it had a pine top, and I was thinking that's not going to go with our brand. So the guys who did our wall coverings ended up putting wallpaper on the table that we could get a nice black table finish. And yeah, it was stressful, but it was worth it.
How long was that open for?
We were there for 6 weeks.
Okay. That's a long time. Like, that's to go from a standing start to that. Like,
yeah.
It was probably very rewarding though, was it?
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. And like, I remember walking away the first day looking and seeing the brand over the door thinking, how did this happen? Like, how have we got it? And sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll just be sitting there and I'll be thinking, I feel like I'm in a, it's just all so surreal that we have what we have. Because, you know, when you're thinking, you're just kind of doing your own thing. And when it's online as well, it's kind of, you can't, you're not seeing the products all the time and visible. So when you're in the shop, it's different seeing people come in and handle them and seeing how they make them feel. And, you know, it was great. And especially in somewhere like Kildare Village, where you've got such, you know, big brands.
It's so nice. It's such a beautiful place. Yeah, I love it.
So we're going to be there this year again. I think we're going to be going for 3 months this time.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. So it's coming back. That'll be over Christmas, will it? Or during the summer?
When yeah. So from Christmas. October, November, December.
Excellent. Yeah. And then you decided, I need to get a little bit busier.
Yeah.
Let's do another business.
Just a little.
How did that come about? Because I was flicking through your Instagram. I was like, wait, what? I think you just finished the shop. And I was like, another business?
I know. I don't do things by halves.
No, I love it. Tell me how that came about.
Well, we have had a few different experiences with fulfillment companies being online. And
for anyone that doesn't know exactly what that means, what does that mean, a fulfillment company for you?
A fulfillment company is the company that will look after the pick, pack and dispatch of our orders. So, you know, looking after it from the time the person purchases to when it gets to our customer. So we'd been with a few, and there was just always little niggly things that kind of got me, from price points that they were charging to the way things were delivered, the time that things were taken to be delivered. And as a brand, I kind of felt, you know what, I know what will work and what customers want. And I know I can do that well because I am a bit of a perfectionist. So I want things done at a really high level all the time. So Olivia, who is my CEO, she has about 12 years experience in this area as well. And we kind of chatted one day and we said, what do you think about bringing it? First, initially, it was just to bring AU in-house and just do it ourselves. And then, you know, we had been, people kind of get onto me sometimes asking me for advice and things like that. And I thought, well, we could probably do that for other people as well. You know, we could really help them get off the ground and get going if we were to be able to fulfill for them. And I kind of felt once we have the warehouse, we have everything there. Like we have all the ingredients. We just need to get the people, you know. So we went looking for a warehouse, and we were really lucky that one had come up. It wasn't on the market yet, but I had been talking to a guy locally about trying to find somewhere in the business park that I was in. But he said, no, but this thing is coming up if you want to look at it. And we went down, and within 3 days we had said yes. And all of a sudden we were into a 5-year or 10-year lease, whatever it is that we're here. And it was huge. And we just didn't think too much, just kept going, you know.
Break that down for me though. 3 days. Break down that thought process in your head. Because people just listen to that sentence in one go, they'll be like, wait, what? 3 days. How do you approach that though in your head, Susie? Like, how do you go through that mindset?
Well, you know, I suppose I didn't think about it too deeply. I think if I had of, I perhaps would have had a lot of more questions and a lot of reservations, but I didn't let myself think about it too much. And actually, that's probably one of my strengths and my weaknesses, is that I'm a really quick decision maker. So like like I said to you, if my gut is telling me yes, I will just go yes. But if my gut is saying, I'll take my time.
Okay.
So funny enough, I didn't, the lease and stuff didn't scare me because I know AU's in such a good position that I wouldn't need to be afraid, you know. And that's, I suppose for me, it's always about security. As long as I know I'm not putting anyone at risk, I'm okay. Like calculated risks obviously have to be taken, but not stupid risks. So when I saw it, when we walked in the first day, even though it was, when we walked into the offices that we have now, the company that was here before left during COVID, but it genuinely, honestly looked like the end of the world had happened because there was still half cups of tea on the desks.
Oh, it's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it was so just eerie walking in. But there was something about the place. We just felt, yes, this is our office. This is where we need to be, you know? And so I just said to the guy, the auctioneers, and I just said, like, well, we're happy, you know, this is what I want.
Easiest deal of his life.
Yeah, he's like, okay, happy days. And I think I'm a pretty easy customer so far. But I told him a few things that we wanted and he said, okay, no problem. And we kind of said, he said, when do you need to be in? I kind of said yesterday. So he was like, okay, we'll try and get it as soon as we can. They got it painted and it all happened very quickly in the end because I just suppose I was really anxious to get my products back. You know, I'll be honest, there was a few issues going on with the other one that were not good for me. So I was really just anxious to get a hold of my own stock again. And so from that, we just have, again, having a little profile online, obviously, like I said, it's helped and we've lots of brands coming to us now. So it's probably been an easier process to set up than starting from cold and scratch, yeah. You know, from nothing, you know, that we have had that little bit of help to get us up and running. But I suppose when you do it yourself for so long and then you've got it, we had three different fulfillment companies work with us and seeing the way different things, we knew ourselves what we needed, you know, the kind of way.
You're solving your own problem. It's the old cliche. Like the more you learn, the more the cliches come true. Like you're solving your own problem. You're going to be your own customer. You knew exactly what you needed.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And I think what makes us different is that, you know, my face is out there as well. So I always say to people, I have to put my money where my mouth is. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I get annihilated because, yeah. You know yourself online, people
it's
are
quick.
Backwards coming forward. So
it's quick. A friend of mine rang me yesterday and I was like, how are you? And you know, he was like, oh, not great. I got cancelled online and I didn't even know. I was like, oh, well, at least you didn't know about it. And he goes, crazy stuff. Like it's a flip of a coin. It really is. You know, it's scary. It genuinely is scary. How do you cope with that, actually? How do you cope with being the brand and the person and being out there all the time?
Well, I think I've gotten better over the years because I think I've been called pretty much everything under the sun at this stage. So I've built up a thicker skin to listen to things like that now. But I do genuinely, and I know some people probably roll their eyes at this, but I think it's down to the stuff I listen to and stuff I consume. That now, if someone is nasty to me or said something to me, if I know myself I've done nothing wrong, for me it's always their issue. Like, you know, it's not something I did. It's just they're not in a good place and I wouldn't fight with them. I would just be kind of like, okay, cool, you know, thanks.
Yeah.
You know,
like the life's too short, say, yeah.
You know, people before I had my teeth done constantly commented on them. I used to think,
really?
That, is acceptable that someone would say things like that, you know, but they don't see it. But again, I don't get insulted by these things. I just kind of say, God, there must be something going on in their life.
Yeah, what kind of pain are they in that they feel that that's, you know, that disconnect between... It's a person on the other end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because you want to vent in the phone, it's still a person.
Yeah.
It's surreal. It's surreal. So you've kind of, is it experience then? You've kind of come to just acknowledge it and kind of move on?
I think so. And like, I mean, I do still get, if somebody has something bad to say or negative to say, what of our products? Because look, I'm under no illusion. Our products aren't going to be for everybody. I love them, but somebody else mightn't love them. And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But sometimes when people say that, because I work so hard on them, I do get a bit, you know, you're going to take it to heart sometimes. I would take that to heart more than someone telling me I look like Barbie gone wrong, you know, the kind of way. So it's more that, but no, I learned to compartmentalize it now, you know, and I just say, you know, that's their thing. And if it's really bothered me, I'll just go for a run and then I'll be fine.
I love it. What's the plan for 5-Star Fulfillment? What's the goal or what's the vision?
So for us, we want to be kind of a one-stop shop for brands. So we want to be able to do their order fulfillment and the picking, packing, the stock management and storage. But we also, on the other hand, want to help them with their PR and get their names out there, get them up and running. It's something that I felt I could have. I had no real mentors when I was starting out. Everything was learning by doing. And I probably, if I had have had some more, you know, qualified direction, could have gotten where we are now a little bit quicker and a little bit less painless, you know, less painful. But I like the thought of a brand coming to us who are at a certain point where they need to outsource their fulfillment, but they're still not sure about the likes of who do I contact for this? Like contacts in certain press or who's, you know, trying to help them make a plan and make a vision for their brand is how to make it bigger and better. And even it comes down to like the smallest things like barcodes on products. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that don't think to do that or to have their products trade, like have their brand trademarked or, you know, all these little things that you don't think of along the way. We want to be here to help them and we'll do all their customer service as well. So it takes all the painful part away from them so they can concentrate on building their brands rather than getting caught up in the chaos.
I love this idea so much. I think this is such a good idea. What kind of brands and kind of companies do you envision working with? Is it going to be beauty only, health only? What's it going to be?
So at the moment we have, obviously, My Cosmetics, we have a jewelry brand, two clothing brands, Faux Flowers, and I'm trying to think, am I forgetting anybody? We have six in total on board, and we are in talks with a few others, but we would essentially like to kind of keep them lifestyle brands rather than just beauty, but ones that would resonate with us. And our team is a full female team. So no, don't take offense to that, Gary. But I did want a team of women because in our space as well with lifestyle and beauty and things like that, I think that there's just that little bit more care and attention to how it's packed. And that's really important as well. And it's what I say to brands that come and talk to us is that I want the customer to know that it has been really well looked after, that it's not just another product getting thrown down a conveyor belt, you know? So we would encourage people to come out. Like we've had people out this morning and social distance, but they were coming to see the warehouse and, you know, get settled in, things like that. And I want them to be able to come and see that everything's been looked after, that we're going to care for their brands and make sure that everything is done to the top notch level so that they can grow and they can become bigger and better. So like I said this earlier, but the one issue we'll have here is that we're actually running out of space already. So we're looking for more space. So that's a really good complaint 2 weeks in.
That's an incredible complaint 2 weeks in, but I just think there's something special about this idea right now. Just the way the world is now, I think you've just caught the rise of a tide, the rise of a wave coming behind you. It's an incredible idea.
Yeah. I definitely think, because I think people's shopping habits have changed. And for us this year, when things open up again, we definitely are going to have more pop-up shops around the country. But for us, we probably won't ever have a standalone shop, permanent standalone shop. We'll do the pop-up thing because we want to still have the customer experience and people to be able to physically feel it. But I do think that people's spending is now a lot more centered online. And I think now that they know how easy it is and, you know, it's just even returns are so much easier now than they ever used to be that it's not something that's going to go away, you know.
Two final questions for you. The last one is going to be ask you to recommend a book because I know you are a big reader. And the current question I'm going to ask you is what advice would you have for someone, say yourself, kind of 10 years ago starting off, what would your kind of like core tenets of advice be for them? Because obviously you're going to be helping brands now. So what's your kind of rock solid foundations you tell them to look at first?
Well, I suppose it's been said many times, but it's just to not listen to what other people have to say. Like it's, you know, follow your gut and just work really, really hard. Have a passion for it. I think if you don't love what you do, it's too hard. Like entrepreneurs and owning your own businesses, it's just too hard unless you love what you're doing. So I would put the blinkers on and not listen to anybody else. And I don't know if you've seen it, but that famous speech Brené Brown did about it, it's not the critics that count. Like I would never listen to feedback from anybody who is not in the same lane doing what I'm doing, you know. Otherwise it's just, and people say it out of sheer care and like they don't want to see you fail or see you get hurt, but that's kind of keeping you small as well. You know, it's kind of just have your vision and just keep your eyes on it. Keep the eyes on the prize at all times and go with your gut.
That's incredible advice. Simple and very, very powerful. What book would you recommend that's had the most impact in you? You can recommend a couple if you want, but what's the kind of one you kind of really go back to all the time?
Well, I definitely listen to Mel Robbins' 5-second rule every so often again. It was the book for me. It was the right book at the right time, like you say. And I just feel like even from down to on the way home from work, sometimes when you have to get milk and you don't want to go in and get milk, you go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you're already in the shop and it's done. You know, it's something I use every single day for various different things. And it's just, when I read it, it made so much sense. She speaks so clearly and just, she's having a conversation with you that it just is one of those ones I do tend to go back to. I do like a lot of Brian Tracy's stuff as well. I don't know if you read his books.
I haven't
books.
Actually. What are they?
So he would have like The Psychology of Selling, and then there's, he has this one book, it's The Secrets of Self-Made Millionaires. And it's a half an hour speech that he did, but it's in a little audio book. But again, it just makes so much sense.
Brian Tracy. Okay.
Brian Tracy, yeah.
I love you. Give me a recommendation I haven't heard about before. I love this. Brian
well,
Tracy.
The half an hour one, I have to say, I go back to that every now and again as well. And it's not just about money, but it's the things that he says, you know, and it's about, it just helps you to take the chances you need to take. And it's given so plainly and so clearly that it just couldn't not motivate you to do something, you know.
It's like the thing, beware the person takes 10 minutes to explain something that could have been done in a sentence. It's always like, give me the simple version. Because if you can't break it down, you don't understand it either.
Yeah, exactly.
Super. That is so good. Susie, where can people learn about all your businesses? So go through them all and list them all where people learn a bit more.
So we are on Instagram. My own one is susie.au, and then we have AU Makeup Ireland Instagram. And then Five Star Fulfillment is at Five Star Fulfillment. On Instagram as well. And the websites are au.ie and fivestarfulfillment.com. So I'm to be found everywhere.
Susie, thank you so much for chatting.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a delight.
Well done. You made it to the end. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Susie. She's just such an incredible personality and an entrepreneur. Thank you very much. As I said at the start, if you could send this podcast to one other person or share it on social media, you'd be doing me a massive solid, and I would really appreciate it. I will see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. Have a great weekend.